obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
I'm an alcoholic and an addict. My name is Sherry. My sobriety date is July 24th, 1997, and my home group is the Lambda South Halt Group on Sunday mornings. And if you're ever in Fort Lauderdale, please join us. I got a couple things I got to do first. One is take a drink of water. Two. Hot flashes, and when I'm a little freaked out, they happen a lot more. And third, but not in that particular order, I have some tools. And I don't usually write notes, but in a half hour, I gotta stay focused, and that's not always easy for me. So, I'm here to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And there's so much I want to tell you. All of you, there's a lot of you. I want to tell you that I got sober in Fort Lauderdale when I was 21 years old. I was told by a judge that I was going to die if I didn't go to those meetings in jail. I had been sitting in jail for about 4 months. And I heard him. I believed him. And I was one of those kids. I come from a family that, very successful family. They were very busy. And so I was kind of not seen. And so I used that not being seen to, do whatever the hell I wanted to do. And that's basically what I did. So I wasn't really good with rules. Curfews, rules, school, and that meant school. I dropped out in ninth grade. My first drug was pot. And the first time I smoked a joint, some people say, it wasn't my plan to grow up to be an addict or an alcoholic. But when I took that first hit off that joint, that's what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. I wanted to feel that way for the rest of my life. And that gave me a sense of belonging, some confidence and courage. And you look at me now, like confidence, courage, people who know me, I'm pretty much a loud mouth. Control issues, right, Todd? I was a big personality. So the pot gave me what I wanted, but I'm telling you, I was born an alcoholic and an addict because I took off running with it. I mean, it wasn't enough. And it's funny because, it's not funny, but after I was sober in AA for 10 years, I relapsed, and my first drug was pot again. And I took off running. I mean, it's the same story. It didn't change at all for me. And I went to jail when I was all the time. I don't pick an age. I went to jail. I met up with some bikers. I left home at 13. I met up with some bikers later in life. I would go back and forth my home life. I'd go back and forth. My mother would hide me out from my father. He was an alcoholic. He's one of those genius alcoholics, He was, people liked him, He was loud, he was boisterous, and he was really smart. And before I could leave the house, he'd quiz me on math and stuff, because he was always building stuff. And he'd like, so if we did this, this, and this, what would happen here, So I was really good at, this is a skill I learned from him. I could focus in and pay attention, razor sharp attention at that moment and give him the answer he needs so I could leave, I always had that skill that I could see what to do in the moment and do it so I can get what I want and leave. And I've carried that through my life, but that's just another mask that I wore. You know, I wore many, many masks as an alcoholic and an addict. So what would happen out there in the world, you know, the Al-Anons are talking about that they survived. I didn't know y'all talked about that much. I've been in Al-Anon 8 years, and I haven't heard so much about the surviving. But I survived my own alcoholism by having that razor sharp, what to do. I was with a biker one day, a bunch of them were at the clubhouse. I ran with the outlaw motorcycle gang, and a guy put a gun to my head, and he said, "What would you do if I pulled the trigger?" Now, I could cry, I could snivel, I could do all that stuff. But instead, I said, "That'd be a huge mess to clean up." You know? And he's like, good answer. And, you know, so I had that skill. You know, it was a great skill to have, to think on your feet. And it saved my life a lot of times. But now, as I have gotten sober and stayed sober and done a little more spiritual work, I believe I have a lot more going on for me than just my own mind. I think I'm carried a lot more than I know. I got sober, like I said, in the court system, and I had a great sobriety. I went to meetings. I was 21 years old. It was 1983. The old timers, you know, were like, "I spilled more of my tie than you could ever drink," you know, and I was like, "Yeah, can you imagine the drugs I've done? Dude, you haven't done those. You don't know nothing." You don't know nothing. And so, but they let me talk about drugs. Nobody shut me down in AA when I started talking about drugs. And I'm really grateful for that, very grateful for that. My first sponsor was hot. Oh my God, I got hooked up with her from the treatment center, like, said, "Oh, we're going to hook you up with..." Oh, I went right to a halfway house. And so they hooked me up with this, but I didn't know I was a lesbian, so I missed out on that. But she was amazing. And it was at that time with The Cure and Mad Max, and she had the cuffs on, and she was hot. I wanted what she had. I just didn't know it. But it's funny, because now when I look back, I can see how I hung on her every word. But she gave me a lot. She brought me through those first few months sober. Actually, I spent 14 months altogether institutionalized somehow, jail, treatment, halfway house. And then I was let out on my own, and I got a roommate in AA and spent 3 years. And I loved AA. I would do anything. When I first got sober and I found out there was a way that I didn't have to continue living like I was living, I didn't have to continue dancing in bars and being used by men and using my body to just for a place to sleep. Waking up in places that I didn't know where I was, different states, different counties, different people's beds, having to, you know, they call it the walk of shame today. To me, it was, you know, that degradation of having to leave somebody's house and not even knowing their names. And usually it wasn't a house, it was a, you know, disheveled apartment with roaches. You know, it was just, that's how I lived. I went from my parents living on 10 acres and in a beautiful home with horses to, you know, putting my head down and walking out of an apartment from somebody I don't know who they are, and not knowing what happened to me the night before. I lost my place. I think that happens up here, because everybody that I've heard speak said, "What was I saying?" What the hell was I saying? So what I do want to say is that my sponsors. So when I got here at 21 and you told me to get on my knees before I went to bed, get on my knees in the morning, read this, read that, have to make your bed, you have to show up 15 minutes early, you have to go to coffee after, I did whatever you told me to do. It was like the dying grabbing a life preserver, like it says in our book. And I I didn't grow up with words like grace and courage and acceptance and gratitude and all that. So I had to learn to put a name to those feelings. And I also had to learn to put a name to anger, resentment, self-pity. And I was told I was only allowed to feel sorry for myself for 5 minutes. That's it. And then move the hell on. And I did a little extra, but my parents were okay. You know, they were glad I was getting sober and all that. But the first time I got sober, they didn't really. My dad wasn't around for my second time, but it was just great. Sherry got sober, because I was still the bad kid getting better. I wasn't the sick person who got well. I was the bad kid getting better. And I want to tell you about that 10 years, what's an amazing thing. And what happened really quickly was I came out. At 7 years, I came out. I had married a guy. And 7 months later, I was like, I don't know why I did this. It was the next thing to do. I was trying to fit in. I was trying to do what I thought I was supposed to do. And I was sponsoring some gay women at the time. And my sponsor was gay. And I thought I was just open, So what happened was I met this woman, and one of the girls I sponsored, her name was Stacy. And I met her. I was a drug and alcohol treatment counselor. Yep, I was. And sick as can be. And they let you be that, with really no qualifications. Except that you're sober, and I don't think that's a good qualification. So I met Stacy while she was in detox. I was the detox counselor, and while she was in detox, I met her. And she kept coming in and out of detox. And I just took this liking to her. I just really, like a sister, and then something horrible happened to her, and I felt responsible, and because that's easy for me to do. And I became her sponsor, against the rules. But I did it anyway. And it was her birthday, and this other woman, Sandy, was throwing her a party for her birthday, and there was a lot of lesbians going to be there, and I'm like, I don't think I should go, I wouldn't know what to do if they hit on me. And so Sandy called me and convinced me it would be okay. They're not going to recruit me. She lied. I walked into that woman's house and fell in love with her the minute I walked in that house. I never, just like AA, when I walked into the rooms of AA, I never wanted to leave that house again. And I had a husband, new husband. So my husband says to me a couple weeks later, are you sleeping with one of those sponsees? And I'm like, no, God, no, I'd never do that. I wouldn't. A couple weeks later, he says to me, you're never home anymore, what's going on, blah, 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 and I said, I think I'm gay. And he runs to me and he goes, I knew you were a dyke. I'm like, wow, why didn't you tell me? We could have avoided all of this. God. So we got divorced. And we did it, we did it loving. I learned something from Alcoholics Anonymous. I loved this guy. He was a great guy. He was sleeping with prostitutes and smoking crack behind my back. I didn't know all that. I thought he was sober and, loyal, but that wasn't happening. But we went to therapy and we broke up, I love you. This isn't about you. And, I tried to do it gentle. At the best I knew how at the time. That's something I do today when I'm working through something in my life today. I say, do I want to look back on this with grace, or do I want to look back on this with regret? So how am I going to handle this because I know I want to look back on it with grace. And that was one of those things. I can say I look back on that with grace. So Sandy and I got together. We were together 4 years. She was my first lover. And we became, after we broke up, we moved to Colorado the first time before Todd, because I've done that twice. We moved to Colorado, and I was 9 years sober. And my dad had just died. And
to obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
I quit going to meetings. I went to a couple meetings, and like Todd said, they weren't the same. So instead of sticking around, I just hung out with other people. I bought a Harley Davidson, and I got with the girl pack, and we rode Harleys. And when we weren't riding, I was always a designated driver. I was sober. I was a designated driver. A lot of people smoked pot. No problem. I'm sober. I'm happy. But I'm not going to meetings. I quit talking to God. And I was a raging lesbian. Out, you know, I was single for the first time as a lesbian. So that was pretty exciting. And July 4th party in 1993, a joint went around and I took it. I didn't think about it. I didn't plan it. I just took it and took a hit. And I used for 4 years from that time. I didn't go to meetings. I didn't go in and out. I didn't call anybody. I just started using. And about 6 months after that, I started drinking. So I moved to Atlanta, because the people who knew me in Denver or in Fort Collins knew me sober. And I could already feel the unraveling start to happen, and I didn't want them to see that. And plus, I really love the women of Atlanta. So I moved to Atlanta, and I ran a coffee house, and I loved it. It's probably the best job I've ever had. I love that coffee house. I still go to it today. And I started doing cocaine. And cocaine, because then I could drink more, and then I could, you know, and I'd never done crack. And then, oh, and Stacy came up and visited, and then we started using together. And I was with Stacy one time, and I'd got some cocaine, and she says, I hope you don't mind. I don't like snorting this stuff. I like to put it in my arm. And I said, oh, I've always wanted to do that. So I spent a year shooting cocaine pretty much on a regular basis. And then one of those times, I'm looking down at myself on the bathroom floor thinking, what happened? Where did I go? This isn't me. This is not what I wanted for my life. And I hated you people with a vengeance. Oh my God, I blamed you for my relapse. You should have seen I was a mess. You should have taken care of me. I wasn't around for you to see, but, you know, it just, you know, and it was really because of the longing I had to be back here. And, but I didn't, I'm telling you, I can't believe that I'm coming up on 14 years, because I could not conceive how I was going to have one day. I could not conceive that at that time. I wound up calling my friend Sandy, my ex, and she flew me from Atlanta to the treatment center I'd been on in Fort Lauderdale, and I went through there. And I didn't stay sober. It's so funny, because I was there 24 hours, you know, and after or 48 hours. After I got a good night's sleep, felt a little better, got up, and went, I don't want to fucking be here. You know, I forgot how desperate I was, just like that. So, but I did it, and I stayed there, but I didn't stay sober. I got sober then again. That was in 96. So I got sober, you know, about 8 months later, because my friend Sandy and my ex-sponsee, Stacy, were also using together, and we had all used together, and it was really ugly. It was not pretty. And those two together were oil and water. And they were always fucking with my high because they would always argue. Had to separate them. So, hated that. Hated that. So I quit using with them, and I used by myself for the last few months. I did. Sandy's ex, this is a lesbian thing, Sandy's ex-lover, me, and then there's another one after me named Deb. Well, Deb and I got together. It's what we do, man. And she was tired, and she was still living in Sandy's house, and she was tired of, because she didn't use, and she said, I cannot. I mean, because we were crazy, up for days on end, and, you know, just not pretty stuff. Well, you know, going to kill ourselves, you know, it was all that whole thing. And she said, listen, I'm leaving this city. I'm going to spend some time with my folks, get my stuff together, and you know, plan it out from there. Do you want to go with me? And now, I jumped ahead a little bit. 10 minutes, oh my God. What happened was she didn't ask me that. First, what happened was I went into a 7-Eleven at 7 in the morning. I had just ran and got a rock that I could melt down to put in my arm, and I stopped at 7-Eleven and got a six-pack of beer, and everybody's in their suits and ties going to work, getting coffee, and I'm like, ugh. And I finish my drugs, and about an hour late, and I'm begging God, you know, because I don't have anything, and I don't have any money, and either I'm going to have to start prostituting, which I haven't done yet, or I'm going to have to stop, and I don't know how to stop. Deb knocks on the door and says, I'm getting out of this town. Do you want to come with me? And I'm like, yeah, I want to go. I want to go. And she brought me to a freaking swamp in Florida where her parents live in a trailer and they're born-again Christians. And... And I am so grateful for them. So, so grateful. They didn't shove their Jesus down my throat. They loved me. They fed me. They gave me a warm bed to sleep on. And my recovery started in little tiny steps. Deb and I moved over to St. Augustine after a couple of months. And I was still drinking beer and smoking a little pot. No shooting up any drugs. And I got a call from my old sponsor, Amy, and she said that Sandy had just killed Stacy. Just shot her in the head during a 5-day run. Paranoid, cocaine, paranoia, psychosis, and that, you know, Sandy's obviously in jail and Stacy is dead. And my recovery started a month later. That was 14 years ago last month. And one more time, I got drunk. I had run out of pot at this time. I didn't know where to get any, so I just went and I drank like a six-pack of Rolling Rock. It was really nothing spectacular. I woke up the next day. I did some drinking and dialing. I called Stacy's mom and woo! And then I woke up the next day and I said, I never want to feel this way again. And I asked God to please remove the obsession to drink. I didn't ask for the obsession to use, which I had for about 2 years. And I went to a meeting, and then I went to a couple of meetings, but I had this anger. I hated you guys still. Didn't you see the pain I was in? You didn't know my pain, you know? And I was already 10 years, and I had the ego thing. As I had 10 years, you can't tell me nothing, you know? And it was really bad. I had that real, you know, this thing, don't come around me. You don't know me. And I know what I'm doing. And at about 5 years sober doing this, it may have been less, five, I don't know, we'll say five. Anyway, this guy comes. I'm living in Charlotte at the time with Deb. We moved up to Charlotte. I'd like to move. We moved up to Charlotte, and this guy who had been sober where I work left a message. I was on interferon. I got hepatitis C, and I was just starting interferon, and I was really miserable. And this guy, Ron, leaves a note on my desk that said, be ready at 8 o'clock. I'm taking you to the Queen City group of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so grateful for him that when I walked through that door, I knew I was home. I knew this is where I belong. You are my people. You understand me. You see me. And all my life, I've just wanted to be seen. I wanted to be heard. I wanted to be seen. And I wanted to be loved. And you guys did all of that. Once I started going back to meetings, I knew that, you know, I was holding on to Deb to take care of me. So with love, I left her, and I came back to Florida and started another journey of recovery. I want to say that this journey has included my trip to Denver. When I got back from Denver, I was almost 8 years sober, I think, at the time, and I wanted to die. You know, I had this depression, and I couldn't get out of bed. And I was never one of those people that was really depressed. I had friends that were depressed, not me. And, you know, I do my caretaking with them. And I was depressed, and I couldn't function. And thank God I had a dog, because I had to let her out, you know, and I was lived on the third floor, so I had to get up, let her out, go downstairs. Sometimes she'd run herself. I'm like, go, just go. But I got on medication, and I sought some outside help. And now I want to tell you that I heard a speaker this weekend, and she talked about being, you know, it's 7 years, and she wants to die, you know. Sometimes she thinks about killing herself, and I've done that in sobriety, and it seems to me it's like 7 years, and something else needs to happen in our lives, and whether that's seeking outside help or really boning up on the steps, I don't know what. And I want to tell you that I work the steps. I have a sponsor, and I am a sponsor. I carry my message outside. I don't just come to these rooms and talk about Alcoholics Anonymous. I talk about my recovery by how I show up in other people's lives. I want to tell you that I want to thank the committee for having me. You guys have been fantastic. When I was last March, Todd, Jeff, Bill, were at the roundup, and I sat at the table with them, and they're like, yeah, you'd be a great speaker. And I sent my CD, and y'all heard it and brought me here, and I'm so grateful for that. I'd like to invite everybody to the Miami Roundup. It's in March. It's a beautiful time of year. You got to come. And I want to tell you this, and leaving, is that, you know, when I got sober, I've been handed things that are hard to deal with. I've had hepatitis C. I'm grateful that I no longer show up on the specter for hep C anymore. I want to tell you that I just lost my stepfather to cancer. And the woman that drugged me out of jail, put food in my refrigerator, made sure I always had clothes and money in my pocket, was my mother. And I am there for her today. You know, I cut my trip short here. I wanted to stay another week, but my mother really needs me because we're burying my stepfather on Thursday. And I am the woman I wanted to be today. I'm no longer that woman laying on the bathroom floor. Thanks. Was the strength from the people in here, my sponsor, my friend. I have great friends. I have great AA friends. Oh, my God. We're little kids. We get together, and we're like 10, you know. Oh, my God. It's so much fun to be a little kid. And I just want to read this real quick. This was from my, it's a reading I do every day. It's from Mark Nepo. I don't know if you've heard of Nepo, but it's called Out From Under. All the darkness, I'm going to walk the light, from Job. Sometimes there's just too much to consider, too much to understand and analyze, too many consequences to play out in our mind, too many things to clean, unpack, or repair before we can get out and live. Sometimes the simplest and best use of our will is to drop it all and just walk out from under everything that is covering us, even if only for an hour or so. Just walk out from under the webs we have spun, the task we have assumed, the problems we have to solve. They'll be there when we get back, and maybe some of them will fall apart without our worry to hold them up. Wouldn't that be nice? 1 hour when I come to a meeting, sometimes everything looks different. Thanks.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.